demystify the business side of filmmaking. That's right, packaging, marketing, financing, and distribution of media projects, mostly film and TV. Sometimes some other unique projects come into play too. This can be for directors, producers, writers, anybody involved with creating a project and not knowing what to do with it when it's done, or not knowing how to pay for it to begin with. My name is Stephen Lackey. I am a documentary filmmaker. I'm on this journey with you, asking the questions that you want to ask and learning the new information that you also want to learn. We do this through interviewing guests that have been through the process or are going through the process and sharing their stories and their adventures and that kind of thing. We are sponsored by FilmCom. FilmCom is a B2B conference that happens once a year. It's based in Nashville, Tennessee. This year, due to the pandemic, we're also doing it virtually. That is coming up the 21st to the 24th of June. You can participate in the virtual panels just by going over to filmcom.com and signing up and getting some tickets. Highly advise doing that. You'll learn a lot over those few days. So on this episode, we interview Mika Borim. She has appeared in over 40 movies and TV series over the years and transitioned into the director's chair as an award-winning music video director. Now, Mika is here to talk to us about her first feature film, her directorial debut, Hollywood.com. She's going to share all the ins and outs of writing the film, directing the film, starring in the film, and finally, marketing and distribution of the film. So let's hear from Mika on Hollywood.com.
You know, I started out, my first film was a Robert Redford film called Education of Little Tree. It was produced by him. Then I went on to be on Dawson's Creek for a while, and I was on the TV show House, and I was in The Patriot with Mel Gibson. Along came A Spider with Morgan Freeman. Oh my gosh, just like a series of different projects throughout the years growing up on set. And so it was quite the experience to be on set for all those years, because it's a little bit like schooling and, you know, sitting there and watching everyone, like, what do you do? How do you do that? Why do you do that? Which I'm sure at some point was annoying to people, especially like as a child going up and people are trying to work. But, you know, I was just always fascinated and curious how everything worked. And so then as I got older, I think kind of a natural progression for me was to, you know, move into making my own content and my own projects, rather than being a part of other people's projects, which I still very much enjoy because I love collaborations. But I just started to have these stories that I wanted to tell. And so I wanted the challenge of something different and to be involved with a project from, you know, the initial idea and the inception of it, and then to take it all the way through distribution. And I love the idea of, you know, becoming so immersed and involved with each one of these aspects that then I could, you know, even if on other projects down the road, because for Hollywood.com, I did a lot, I wore a lot of hats. You know, for other projects, even if I didn't wear all of those hats, I would have a full understanding of what each, you know, specific element needed and how long it should take and, you know, the full functioning of it. You know, because I think that's always important too. So when you work with people, hire people, make those deals, you know what you're talking about, which helps with negotiation, helps with, you know, budgeting, everything across the board to have had a hand in every area.
So you worked in film and TV both. When you were strictly acting, did you ever see any of that other side, the marketing side and the financing and that kind of stuff? Were you ever privy to any of it?
Some of it. I mean, you know, for film, they always, you know, want the actors to jump in and sort of like be the face of telling different stories and to, you know, hopefully draw on audiences and you know, get some excitement going on it. So I had been familiar with like the press and the press junkets. And then also on some of the bigger projects, I had been involved on, like where they'll actually come in and they'll hire a PR company to help lay out the landscape of like thematically where you'll go in conversations or like what their marketing ploy is for the film overall. So like, for instance, when I did Blue Crush, you know, it's a very strong female empowerment, like girl power type film. And so they went and they talked to us about these different, you know, these different key points that they had, which were so, you know, authentic and on point anyway, but just you know, to sort of go over things that we could hit to help sell and market it. So in terms of like having been involved with understanding that there's a strategy in a certain market and a certain audience for specific films, I was aware of that, but not nothing as in depth as on Hollywood.com. Hollywood.com, you know, takes the lead on all of that because I wrote it, cast it, direct it, you know, everything.
Start in it.
Yeah, start in it. It's a lot of hats.
So you made the move kind of from just acting into directing with a short film, correct? Was that your first project as a director?
Yeah, so from acting into, I moved from acting just in films to producing and acting in short films because I had friends that were filmmakers. So being involved in that level, and then from there into directing and producing and being involved with the other aspects of short films, and did some experimental films along the way, and then music videos as well. So, but you know, there's nothing quite like making a full feature because I feel like the avenues for getting it in front of audiences are so much larger when it's a full feature. When it's a short film, you know, it's you've got the different film festivals and there's a lot of people who are interested in that, but the general public won't necessarily, you know, be privy to go watch a short film. And that's what's cool about music videos too, though, is music videos are very accessible. Very, very accessible. Oh, this is cool. This just came through, was it 2 days ago? The Josie Awards, which are in Tennessee, they're the biggest independent music awards. There was a music video that I directed during the pandemic. And that music video was just nominated for Music Video of the Year. It's called Catch Me If You Can by the artist Travis Tidwell.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm excited. So I'll be there in September for that.
That's amazing. So it kind of does change my flow a little bit, but since you're there, I was going to ask you about this anyway, is what was it like working in the pandemic versus how you worked previously? Did you just lock down or did you continue to try to work?
I love working. We're always working on something. It became, you know, it was very cool that we were able to do this music video. It was a very interesting experience though, because we were on a ranch in Arkansas. And so the artist, Travis, he came up with his manager and everyone from Nashville. And then we had a crew come out from California. So everyone drove from their separate ways. And, you know, we were trying to keep everything, you know, keep everybody happy, keep everything cool, keep everybody separate. And so there was another layer, rather than just being focused on like the artistry of things, there was a layer of making sure that everyone felt comfortable at all times with where it was that they sat, you know, with their opinions about what was going on in the world. So just making sure, you know, with so many different personalities. And, you know, I think all this stuff with the pandemic is, you know, people have like visceral extreme emotions about it. So, you know, just like, you know, placating everyone on top of that, which took a little extra time and a little extra finesse, but, you know, ultimately worth it. So everybody's cool. We like all our people, you know, everybody's cool.
So as things are starting to like loosen up in relation to the pandemic, do you have a different feeling about upcoming projects?
I'm excited to get back to work on everything. You know, I think that we still have some hurdles to get through in terms of, you know, most, you know, there's all the restrictions still with the different pods and the groups. And so things are taking longer and they're costing more still. But it'll be nice as that sort of phases out, because I think, you know, for independent films, it adds more to the budget. And it's not necessarily adding more to the budget that you're getting on screen. So that's the whole thing is, you know, I think that as an independent filmmaker, like, you know, you try to you know, make sure that everything you spend money on really, you know, goes up on the screen. So that's the one thing with kind of finessing and filming things right now. I've just been kind of sticking to doing stuff with like very small intimate groups with buds, you know, so we don't have to get into that big landscape. So yeah, that was one thing about Hollywood.com is, I'm just like, you know what? It's a really good time for the film to come out because there's nothing, you know, it's like an escapism film. It's just fun. There's nothing, you know, that you have to think too hard about it. You got these weird, wacky characters. We have a great ensemble cast in it. And so everyone just goes out and, you know, is on this Romancing the Stone-esque adventure. And there's nothing in it that's religious, political, no major violence, you know, like none of these things that have weighed on us, you know, all so heavily in the last however long. And so that was, we're like, you know what? It's actually really, really good timing for the film to be released because we had planned to release it. We held on to it for a little bit longer. We had planned to release it pretty much at the beginning of the pandemic. That was our scheduled time frame. So
how were you intending to release it? What was the intent? Was it, did you, when you started it, did you have a theatrical goal in mind or was there another plan?
Yeah. So the plan with the film was this. So the film, you know, takes place in, you have Hollywood and then you have Latin America for the film. And so, you know, the film's about these people, this production company trying to make the next big Mayan movie and all these wacky characters trying to one-up each other, network, sell each other out. And, you know, so we have the Hollywood part and then Latin America. And so there's a lot of Spanish language in the film and a lot of Latins in the film. And so we thought it would be really fun to do something different. A lot of people, you know, do their theatrical releases domestically in the US first, and then they'll go, you know, into these different international locales. And so the original plan was to release it in Mexico, in the theaters. And so we'd done a promotional tour actually for about 6-7 months prior to that, where we'd done all the radio, the TV, the podcasts, traveling around, and then we were releasing it in the theaters there with one of the distribution companies. And so when the pandemic came up and they shut down all the theaters, it was one of those things like, okay, so do we just hold off for the theaters? Because what a great thing to release in Mexico, you know, put it in those thousands of theaters, and then get the buzz off of that. And then we wanted to bring it to the US and then do the theaters in the US, which we thought would be really fun too, because generally speaking, like I had mentioned a moment ago, you know, you start in the US and then you go to somewhere like Mexico. So the Mexican distribution companies are so excited to be first, you know, get the product first and then have US secondary. So we were so excited about our plan, and it was like such a cool deal that we had secured on it. And when the pandemic came through, we're like, oh man, like, okay, so we're on hold. Like, do we just wait? And, you know, we're sitting there like, oh, I'm talking to different people, you know, and at that time, everything, you know, you couldn't tell when things were going to end and, you know, the different stories each day. And so the bigger studios, because I have friends who are execs at these bigger studios, like in the US, they were talking about, they're still holding on to their movies. They're still, you know, they haven't released some of these $50 million, $100 million movies like Venom, you know, is they're sitting on that. They're sitting on these projects. HBO Max, you know, has started releasing these Warner Brothers films, but that's partly, you know, I'm not for sure, but, you know, from what I hear that's partly because they're launching that, you know, to be competitive with like a Netflix. But generally speaking, like when the theaters open back up, it's going to be crazy with all of these like $50 million, $100 million movies. And so for independent film, it was like one of those things like, well, you know, when we want to release it, like what will we, you know, it's going to be hard to be competitive with a $50 million film and their press and advertising budgets they have on those too. So I started talking to people, more people in the industry, and the conversations came up too that, you know, with the pandemic, everyone is at home. Everyone's at home, everyone's watching everything, and they're running out of content. Like, you know, content's getting low. and they're starting to buy more foreign films. People are revisiting, you know, TV shows like, you know, Breaking Bad or whatever that they had watched however long ago, because they want something new. And so the conversation came up like, hey, like, it's the perfect time to release the movie and do it on streaming. And so, okay, all right. So we released Hollywood.com on Amazon, and that's where we're at with it now. And like I said, because it's fun, it's goofy, it's quirky, it's got, you know, Tom Arnold's in it, Devin Mattrey, Cody Cash, Paige Howard, like it's got these, you know, characters that have been working for however long, you know, have these long careers, that combination of that with goofy stuff, I think that, you know, it's a good place for it.
So did you guys make a deal with Amazon, or are you guys just self-releasing?
We made a deal with Amazon. So that's for the US and for the UK. So now we're trying to figure out, we want to release it in Mexico. So we're trying to figure out, because we still have that deal on the table with the theaters. And so we're trying to figure out now if we want to do theaters, because you're still going to be, and their theaters are starting to open back up, but you're still going to be competing with these, you know, large films. If you decide to hold out when the numbers are really looking good for the theaters, you know, right now it's just kind of trickling in, but, or if we want to do, you know, streaming with them down there too. I think that, you know, people also have souped up their TVs and their speakers and their Lazy Boys. And, you know, like since the pandemic, people have smoking at home, sound systems and everything else now too, which is something to consider that's different.
So that's interesting. So you guys really haven't decided, because you could end up, there's potential you could end up doing better in Mexico than maybe even here.
Yeah. I think so. You know, it's an interesting thing, because the movie has so much like Latin America, you know, colorful flavors in there. We have a lot of Latin actors, a lot of really cool locales. We have the Enchanted Piece of Jade. We have stuff about the Mayan culture. You know, we have all these different elements to it. There's also like with the language. So my dad, who's in the film and he produces, and he also wrote on it. You know, speaks fluent Spanish. And so there's also these funny kind of like small hidden jokes within like double innuendos within the Spanish language. So there's a lot of Mexican humor that's speckled throughout too, that we think, you know, would really showcase the film.
So let's step back for just a second and tell me, you guys co-wrote it. Where did you come up with the idea, and sort of what inspired it?
Oh my gosh. well, okay. So it's funny because I look at it and I'm like, you know, most people for independence, they pick one room and you have three people and there's a conflict and it's, you know, conflict resolution and that's it, which is great for an independent. But this one, for whatever reason, we were like, let's make it big and use all these like fun things and all these different locations and adventure story, which is like so ambitious for an independent feature, especially for a directorial debut independent feature. I knew that, you know, they always say to like write what you know. So I like over the years have racked in my head just a collection of funny experiences, funny characters, and situations with being on set, like with Hollywood stuff and networking and, you know, people name dropping and trying to sell each other out and ladder climb and all these things. And so I thought it would be really fun to have that whole Hollywood aspect and be able to pull some of those life experiences and drop them in and like make light of things. And then I wanted to branch it out though. I didn't want it to just be a movie about like a satire on Hollywood. And so I thought it would be fun to then add in this other side of it, which is the Latin America, Mayan, Enchanted Jade piece. And so that sort of stems from my dad. He's a gemologist, and so he's worked all over Latin America, and like I said, he speaks fluent Spanish and all of that. And so we took the two worlds and combined them together, with the major influence for the film being Romancing the Stone. So like, you know, it kind of follows that same trajectory And then I also took influence on the film from Get Shorty, because I love that sort of like making a movie within a movie, and like the ending on Get Shorty where it feels very Hollywood. So yeah, that was how it all came together. And we filmed all over with it too. We filmed in Guatemala, we filmed in Mexico, we filmed in Texas, Arizona, you know, California. We filmed in those sand dunes in Arizona. It was 110.
So when you guys completed the script, did you ever think about maybe not making it and just trying to sell the script? Was that ever a thought that you guys had?
No, we always wanted to make it. So the film itself like very much relies on having this fantastic ensemble cast. And so I went through and I cast the film with all actors that I'd worked with in the past. And so I think that that's, part of the heart of the film is that it has all these like really odd, quirky characters. And I worked with each one of the actors to develop the characters with them. And, Tom Arnold played my dad on the TV show, The Tom Show, which was on Warner Brothers for a couple of years when I was around 10 years old. And so, when I reached out to him, I was like, what would be a fun character that he'd be great for? And I was like, El Jade, the cartel drug lord in Mexico, which funnily enough is he right now has a show. It's a docuseries that he just released with his sister called The Meth Queen of Iowa. So the two of them are taking over the Americas with their drug rings. But, we brought on Devin Rattray, he was Buzz in Home Alone. And then he was in Masterminds. He's on the Steven Soderbergh show, Mosaic. He just did a new Steven Soderbergh movie out in California. I just saw him the other day. But he works all the time on different things. We have Paige Howard, who is in Adventureland. She plays like this crazy kind of, badass strong woman producer. And she generally plays, like a very nice, like girl next door. So, we developed out the characters to fit these actors. So I think that, if we would have just sold the script, it would have lost him the heart. But also my thing with it too, is I wanted to direct, I wanted to have that experience with directing, and it was our story too. I think when something's that personal, you got to be a part of it. It's got those Hollywood jokes that I know, and it's got dad's gemology stuff, So like, I think that you need those to bring them all together.
So, I realized we didn't do this. Can you just give us a quick synopsis of what the movie is about?
So the movie is there's two production companies. They're in a race to make the next big Mayan film. And then they're just selling each other out. They're ladder climbing. There's con artists. It's goofy. It's wacky. And there's an enchanted piece of jade that comes into play. And it's just this trajectory of odd characters, like, with their storylines coming in and out of each other. It's fun. It's really fun.
It sounds really fun. So this is you wrote the script, your directorial debut, and it's a big adventure type of story. What was your, the most daunting piece to that? What scared you the most, as far as that move into this feature directing project?
I think the one, there were a lot of things that they were daunting, but one of the ones that was kind of the funniest to me that struck me as the most odd was I really didn't consider about what it would be like to direct yourself. And so, because I acted as a director myself. And so I've been on so many sets since I was little, and, you always have the director there, and I love collaborations. And so I'm always looking for, input, insight, whatever. I just love artists. And so it was funny because when I first directed myself at the scene, I was like, all right, was that good? And I was like, oh no, there's no one to tell me about, are we totally getting this correct? Is it following the narrative? Like, is it meshing well with the other actor? And so that took a moment to digest. And then I think once I sort of digested how to work that out, which my personal plan for it was, which is the way I like to direct in general anyway, is, to really figure out, you know, just sort of what happened before, what happens afterward, and then what beats need to be hit within that scene in order to progressively and naturally move the story and the character forward. And so just making sure that I hit those. And if they were kind of harder beats to hit, or if I felt like I wasn't hitting them, then having that conversation with either the cinematographer or with the other actor in the scene to, you know, ask like, hey, did it seem, you know, kind of get some of their input and guidance on it too. Because I'm really big on working with people that I think are amazing and that I respect. And so, you know, if you have that going and you're collaborating with people like that, then I feel like you're, you know, you're in this safe space where everybody wants what's best, you know, for you, for the project. You guys are a total team. And so that was probably the most daunting part with the directing.
So you mentioned your team. This brings something to light that I've dealt with a lot of young filmmakers, especially writer, director filmmakers. Was there ever any time where this script was like your baby and you had to really work on yourself to be able to delegate some aspects of it into that team? Or is that just something that comes natural for you?
We had so many awesome artists on this project that, you know, all input was welcome. You know, we had those actors that are really high caliber. Our composer on it, you know, which is a little, you know, more developed down the line than just like with the script, but still, you know, people get touchy about that too. Our composer, Lendl Black, he's won Emmys for his musical work. You know, for the editing part of it, we had the polish done by Kevin Ross, who's won Emmys for Stranger Things, and he's on Californication. So, I mean, just like the caliber of these people, like, you don't want to get in and like, you know, if they have an opinion, you're like, by all means, like, please, yes. Like, you know, you don't want to stifle their artistry. Like, I was just so thankful and grateful that they felt passionate about the project too and wanted to come on and collaborate and be a part of things. So, you know, I think when you're working with people at that level, like, you know, if you can hand something over to them, like, you know, sometimes I'm like, no, like, don't even take my input. Like, let's go with what you've got, what you like, you know? So
you wrote the script. It's a big, crazy thing to put together a feature film. What was your process? There's so many milestones that you have to hit before you can even start the film. What was your process as far as wrangling the project?
So the first part of the project was figuring out, you know, just like the basic storyline, figuring out the storyline. Okay, so we have the Hollywood stuff. You know, I sat down with my dad and we put together the, you know, the Enchanted Jid, all the Mayan, the Latin America stuff, which I think is really cool because both of us have backgrounds in these different areas. We're able to bring, even though it's a comedy, but like able to bring in like some authentic realism, you know, where the film can get some like genuine character in both these worlds. So kind of just brainstorming on like, what are the best elements of these fun worlds that we could bring into this? So now we've got, you know, these fun elements that we know that we want to bring in. Then from the fun elements, figuring out what the storyline is, like what is the trajectory of the characters? And then as we started to kind of flesh out what those characters look like, then I started brainstorming because my background in acting, like, you know, is really important to me to have strong actors. And that was going to be like a really fulfilling experience for me for directing too. It was like what I wanted, you know, to have the melding of the minds going back and forth with them on stuff. So from there, as we started to lay out the characters, I started to reach out to different friends that are actors and to see who is interested, who is available. And then, you know, with the friends that were interested, I wanted it to be, these are working actors. I wanted it to be a great experience for them that they could benefit from, you know, apart from it being fun and us collaborating, but also like what would be a great character to play that's against typecast. You know, you always get cast as psycho killer mafiosa. Like, what would you love to play? You know, and that particular is my friend Cody Cash, who he was like, I just want to dance and sing. And I was like, all right, you're the networking. You're networking your way to the top is Marvin Lovejoy, the secretary who can't stop singing and dancing. That's all you. But, you know, so that was the sort of next conversation was building out the cast. And then once we build out the cast, then because they're all working actors, they all came with crazy schedules that we had to work around because we were independent and they're on these like big studio, huge projects. So figuring out what the scheduling would be to make sure that we could make it work with them. And then from there, we went through and saw what was it that we had access to that would make the film really unique, fun, and flavorful. So a good example of that would be we had access to a camel. And so we were like, yeah, the camel has to be in the movie. Like, we're going to get that camel in there no matter what. So, you know, just like the little elements of that. And then like another area where that came to play is my dad's a pilot. So, you know, we wanted to bring that expertise into play. And so that was, you know, a fun, authentic element that we could add into where we had, you know, he's hot wiring the airplane. You know, there's the airplane crash scene about, you know, realistically, like what that would look like, sound like. So yeah, we started adding in those things and then just laying out the schedules around people. And we started shooting it. And, you know, from shooting it with it being independent, there's a lot of problem solving along the way and things that come up because there's not necessarily a huge crew to grease the wheels when something goes wrong. You know, sometimes you have to put things on hold or just kind of, you know, problem solve on the day. But yeah, and then from there, moving into post-production, we moved into post-production. And for this specifically, we wanted to do a really cool look where, because the storylines go back and forth between Hollywood and Latin America, we wanted to make sure that subconsciously there was a different visual feel to both of them. And so everything that's in the Hollywood world has kind of cool and blue tones to it. And then everything in Latin America has these red and orange tones to it. And that was an interesting thing too, because to have those elements really play well, you also need to incorporate, like you can't just do it in the color correction at the end. You also have to include that in the color design. So, you know, in the, you know, making sure that if you want to pull up blue tones, cool tones, that you have, you know, characters in those colors or, you know, walls, furniture, things in those colors so that you can pick them up, and then vice versa for the Latin America stuff.
I love that tip because so many young filmmakers think we'll just fix it in post.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, famous last words, fix it in post. No. Also, post-production is so expensive, you know? Mm-hmm. So fixing it in post is like, you know, a lot of times way more expensive than if you just kind of maybe shoot it again on the day or do a reshoot or whatnot. So, but yeah, then from there, we went into, you know, the sound design on it. So for this, it was really fun too. We have a Foley artist, Pascal Mazier, and he's amazing. He's so good. He's a French guy and he lives in France. He's done over 200 films. The one that always stands out to me is he worked on Leon, the Professional with Natalie Portman, her first film, and he's done so many. And so he came out to California. He had seen the movie. He's a family friend. And my dad had shown him the movie and he loved it. And so he came out to California and spent, you know, 10 days out here in the post-production house doing the Foley work. And we specifically for the film made the Foley work more like slapstick comedy. So everything is overemphasized. And he does it all by hand. He really doesn't use computers for anything, which is really an interesting thing because it's like sort of a dying art form that he does all of this by hand. And it's the tricks for how they're doing these explosions by hand, how they're doing these, you know, birds flying, all this stuff. It's they're secrets that are passed down like a magician from generation to generation. So he's now training his daughter, which is really cool. But it was funny too, because in our post-production sound studio, like when he was in California, the people who do the Foley work in Los Angeles were like, how's he doing that? What is that? And so they would run around into the room and they'd like take a look and he would hide the stuff because it's his secrets. He can't share. He also cracked us up too, because when he came over from France, he had so many suitcases. And we're like, what's in all these suitcases? And then he took him over to the sound studio. And when he started opening them up, it was just like trash. Like, but it was his trash that he loved that he'd worked with for 20 years, you know, to make those Foley sounds of the opening the door, the sitting down in the seat, the, you know, the camel lips moving, like all of that stuff. It was just so funny. So funny.
You have the script, you have your cast, you know that you want, you got to fund it. What was your process to figure out what the budget was going to be and how you were going to pay for it?
Well, you know, we started putting a pen to paper on it, and it was one of those things where, you know, it's independent, want to make it as inexpensively as possible. And so, you know, I think one of the important things when you get to that and you're an independent filmmaker is to look at the resources that you have. What do you have available? And what do you have available that's unique and special that'll make your project unique and special? And, you know, can you tailor your script to that? So that way you're getting the most high production value for the lowest price possible. And I think that that's really the way to sort of, upgrade your independent film in a way without having to, try to go beyond, you know, the means of what you can get together, or what you have for that budget.
So, I mean, and I know there's probably limits as far as what you want to go, but how do you pay for it? What you had to pay for?
How do you pay for it?
Yeah.
You got to get it together. Got to gather the money up together, you know, and believe in what you have going on it, you know. So, you know, I think the idea too, it depends what your end goal is on something, but also if you're putting a film together, you know, I think that if you'd like to make money off of it later on, one of the important things, because sometimes people have passion projects, but maybe your passion project is very like, you know, something very niche that won't be interesting or available to a broad audience. And so I think that's something to kind of remember too, is that if you want to make something that's just, you know, an artist piece that showcases something, like, cool, but maybe that's better suited for a short film. But like, if you want to make a full feature, I think that, you know, trying to consider what may have market value, you know, where there's stronger potential to get it in front of a lot of people and be sort of more broad, is a good way to, you know, try to make sure that you get your money back on things.
So you actually knew that going in when you're writing your script, you guys were doing something that was, that you knew or hoped that you would be able to have additional audience in the Latin community.
Yeah.
And that was a thought for you guys from the beginning?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, including the Latin audience. I mean, that's the Latin audience is one of the biggest growing audiences right now in the film community. You know, they consume a lot of film. And so, you know, it's great opening it up to them as well. And, you know, I think that with our film, you know, it's a pretty much a film that is pretty much a family film. But yet it's not a children's film. It's more of like, you know, an adult concept film, sort of like the more old school ones. So, and then, you know, with the characters too, we didn't go, you know, too far in directions. You know, most of them, you know, they have heart, they have some sort of like redeeming value to them. So hopefully, you know, people connect with them. The other thing too, with having an ensemble piece, in my opinion, is that I personally think it's important when people watch a movie that they find someone that they like and someone that they root for and connect with. And so I think in an ensemble film, this is just my personal opinion, but I think that it's easier for people to find a character that they like and that they enjoy and that they relate to than it is if you just have a film that's a singular person's story and you're riding on the fact that that actor and that character is very likable. And also that actor won't, you know, end up doing something terrible, because I've had friends who have done that before. They cast an actor and then the actor does some sort of like, you know, bad press thing right before the movie comes out, and they're supposed to be so likable and lovable. And you're like, oh my gosh, our whole movie was riding on people liking you. Like, and now you just, you know, So when you do that, an ensemble piece, you sort of, you know, broaden it out. I think one of the goals with this movie too was to have so many different artists involved that it would always, you know, be like a passion collaboration piece that has a unique texture to it. And that's why, like, you know, so that's what I'm saying about like it being marketable. But we never looked at it as like, let's do an exact formula of a movie that you see in the, you know, that's a studio film, because I think you can go too far in that direction too. If you're like, oh, I want to make it marketable, so I'm going to copy this like big budget film or this and that. And then you sort of lose the character and the texture of what it is that a lot of people find, you know, is the spirit of independent film. The fact that it has this like quirkiness that is sort of off the beaten path. So I think it's important to kind of like, you know, toe the line of both of those.
So when the film is finished, and you discussed earlier a little bit about the unique distribution deal that you guys had made, did you have to go to different platforms and pitch, or was that something you already had a connection to?
You know, well, with the pandemic, everything's a lot easier because it's on Zoom, but it's also a lot harder, you know, because sometimes, you know, you connect better over Zoom because it's easier because you've got the meetings, you can do it whenever. But at the same time, you know, nothing's the same as like sitting in the space with someone. And also, you know, a lot of times too, when it's not this sort of pandemic area, you can sit there and have these big movie screenings, you know, and you have the distributors, you have the different people in there, and you're making sure that when they watch your film, they're watching the film, like, you know, in the theater with all the stuff, with the correct sound, and just not at home on their laptops. So we were lucky in the fact that we had already started putting together our deals, and everything was, you know, we'd had conversations going before the pandemic happened. So like when people viewed the movie, they had seen it in these like sneak screening distributor viewings. And so that was cool. Yeah, so we already had some, because I can't imagine like just sending out, you know, sending out links. Like you almost need to send out links with really like awesome speakers, you know, be like, don't text, you know, you just send it out with some sort of like text alarm. So that people watch it, they're not going to text. They got the speakers, they got, you know, the whole thing. I remember there was someone that was funny at one point earlier on when we were figuring out where exactly we wanted to release the film. There was somewhere, and my dad is a friend who is a big producer. And so my dad was like, well, let's get them a TV to make sure that they're watching it on a big TV, because the guy was traveling. And I was like, wait, what? But, you know, it's so important, because depending on what the mood is when someone watches your film, it can change their whole experience with the film, you know, and depending on the quality that they, you know, that they experience it within, you know.
So did you have a method for pitching at all?
No specific method for pitching the film. I think that, no specific method.
I did get the sort of feeling, I felt sort of this pitch tagline coming together when you were describing it to me. I mean, when you say get shorty and romancing the stone, well, that gives me a lot of information right there in a couple of words. And I didn't know if that was something you actually used.
Yeah, so we did use Get Shorty, Romance in the Stone, which works really well when you're speaking to people who have like, you know, the film vocabulary. And so that works well for like pitching and selling like within the community. But if you branch that out to, you know, the Gen Z, they're like, what? And I'm like, oh, shoot. And I had to like, it was funny because I got like whatever the what's that called, the you know, the equivalent, and they're like Dora the Explorer, and I was like, no, yeah, okay, Dora the Explorer. But so I think using films as a reference for tonally what the movie is can be really good if it's the correct audience, you know, if it's people in the film industry, if they're the right age range, like, you know, then I think that can be, because also, if they were successful films or people had a good experience with them, you know, they immediately, like, it immediately brings something to play. They're not trying to just associate it with random stuff in their head. So that can be beneficial for sure.
You've probably been asked this, but if you have a piece of advice that you could give an indie filmmaker who has completed their film and they're trying to find a way to get it out there, what would that be?
You complete your film and trying to get out there. I think that you just keep exploring different options. I think that, I think that you should create like different small pieces of content too, any publicity that you can do, getting the word out about it. If you can get your actors to do publicity, if you can make like 30-second clips and put those up online. I've had friends with independent films before that have taken small clips of really funny pieces and put them up on Funny or Die. And start raising awareness that way. I think that just whatever you can do to kind of give momentum to the project, and then, you can use that momentum. You can build a press kit and get that out to distributors. Or there's also quite a few, and I don't know specifically, but I've had people mention it to me recently about there's these sort of smaller distribution platforms that you can submit to online. And then I guess they act as the liaison and submit you to bigger ones as well. I haven't done that myself, so I'm not familiar with it. But from my understanding and the way it was explained to me, it sounds pretty cool.
What is your most important piece of advice for a first-time feature director?
Okay. Most important advice, you're going to be with it for a while. So, if you're a first time director and, if you're hired on someone else's project, that'd be a different story. But most likely, if you're a first time feature director, you're going to be putting most of the things together yourself. That being said, you should pick a subject matter that you like, that you feel strongly about, that you'll enjoy telling other people about, that you feel, confident in bringing people on board, bringing actors on board. And, because you're going to be talking about it for a long time. and if you aren't totally in the know with what it's about and you're not in love with what it's about, then it'll be hard to relay that passion. And it's going to take a lot of passion and motivation to run through all the steps on the project and to get it out there.
All right. So I want to tell you, thank you so much for spending this time with us and sharing your thoughts on filmmaking and getting films out. And most importantly, that's the toughest part for a lot of us. And tell us what we're going to be seeing you do next.
Ooh, okay. So next I've got this documentary that I want to do in Nashville. So we'll have to talk about that. And then apart from that, there's an educational children's series of films that we've been putting together. And so that's been kind of interesting to plan with the pandemic, but that'll be really cool. And then there's a historical piece that's based off of a real story about a boy in the 1920s who travels across the U.S. by jumping trains. And he starts in California and then heads south. And so he has these sort of coming of age vignettes. That's a really beautiful piece that I've got on the plate. And gosh, other stuff too. I'm interested at all. More music video work. I love the turnaround time frame of the music video work compared to films.
Yeah, between a feature project, it's nice to be able to have, I call them palate cleansers.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's so true.
Yeah. So where can people connect with you online?
So for the film, you can check out hollywoodcon.net. And that has a lot of like fun behind the scenes and different things about Hollywood.con. And then for me, everything is just under my name, which is MIKA and then BOOREM. It's the same across all social media platforms.
I was going to say all the platforms.
All platforms, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for spending some time with us.
Thank you.
That was the dynamic Mika Borim talking about her new film, Hollywood.com, sharing stories from both sides of the camera, this time as an actor and as a director, producer, writer, wearing all the hats. A lot of you guys out there are doing the same thing on your independent films, and I hope she was able to give you some inspiration as well as some tips and tricks for making your film, funding it, and distributing it. Don't forget, head on over to filmcom.com and sign up to be part of our yearly conference that brings industry executives and filmmakers together to discuss projects, to pitch, and to network. It's all virtual this year, but you can still participate in those panels and workshops and hopefully pick up some great information. Remember to follow me on all the social media platforms, but mostly on Facebook at just Stephen Lackey. Until next time, we'll see you guys and keep pushing your film.